Welcome to Minute 44, The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, Tom is still in the cooler this week, so hopefully he'll be back on Monday. And joining me today, once again, is Tyson Ferris, filmmaker and podcaster. Welcome back, Tyson.
Hi, everybody.
All right, well, Minute 44 begins with McDonald raising some concerns and goes all the way till night falls on the compound. So this minute actually continues the conversation from the previous minute, what we discussed yesterday, where Danny is explaining to everybody about his plan for how he's going to dig the tunnel under the stove. Then yesterday we had a very fascinating discussion about bathroom tiles, you know, and how they decorated the barracks in the prison camp. Basically, it's interesting that Mac has some concerns about the fact that they're going to be dealing with taking the tiles from the other things. This is going to be a little bit tricky. Apparently, you know, Henley is confident enough that they don't really need to worry about it. And the response from Willie is great, which is something that you'd think Mac would have known already. Because Willie's response is, he says, well, it's going to be tricky, not when you're organized. And that's what this whole movie's about. This movie's about, you know, a group of POWs that are just organized. They know what they're doing. I mean, this has been mentioned numerous times that this movie is pretty much a heist movie. You know, one of the first of its kind, which has been copied so many times over the near 60 years since this movie came out. You know, each of the characters has their own specialty, and they're all working together for the one goal of, you know, breaking the bank, or in this case, actually breaking out of the
camp. Yeah, I mean, everybody has their own superpower. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Completely.
You get the scrounger, the forger, you know. But yeah, I like how you just bring, they out-organize the Germans, basically.
Correct. And this is a movie that actually doesn't show the Germans in an evil manner. They try to
it's very matter of fact, the portrayals. It's just they have us captured, yes. And we're the ones that are captured. And that's about the extent of it. Yeah,
that's right. They're never tortured, you know, like in other movies where we've seen, you know, POWs being tortured by their captors and stuff like that. That doesn't happen here. They have, I guess, somewhat cordial conversations with them. You know, even when they're talking about gardening or being able to sit out the war as comfortably as possible. You know, things like that. Again, they're organized. There's no question about it. For the fact that Willie has to say this to Mac is a bit surprising. Mac is part of the top echelon of Big X, of the X organization. You know, so it's interesting that he does it. And then, you know, yesterday we discussed the fact that there are eight people in the room. Now they have a ninth show up. You know, Roger shows up. You'd think that, you know, someone might get suspicious that there's so many people that are in the middle of the day mm-hmm. disappearing, especially since they should be keeping an eye on Roger. I guess not. You know, then his big question to Danny is okay, is the tile that you're going to break through, is it big enough? Well, when you got small guys, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, yeah.
and Danny's response is that it's perfect. It's right through the middle of the ocean, meaning they couldn't have built this barracks in a better way than they did. They built it perfectly where they gave us the perfect spot in order to dig down. My whole question is what's actually underneath this block? You know, they're going to be breaking through.
I feel like I've always felt like it's just a cement slab. Right?
That
the building's put on. Yeah. Dirt underneath it.
What we've seen in one of the first scenes in the movie, you know, where Ashley Pitt looks under the barracks are all on stilts.
Oh, that's right.
So interesting. So the question is if it's just a slab that they're going to go through, then obviously the Germans, if they're looking under the barracks, they're going to see something. So it has to be that it's something that goes down into the ground itself,
sure,
for them to be able to get through. I mean, they trust it, so it's harder to to try to figure out what it is that they're doing. You know, it gives one a lot to think about.
I wonder if they're almost on like foundational like blocks, so you can still see under them, but then maybe there's like these kind of concrete pillars just going down through the middle of one of those.
But that's a lot of work to have to go through a concrete pillar to get into the ground itself.
Oh, didn't say it was going to be easy to escape. I called the easy escape.
That is true. That is very true.
And I think we see a shot of it later, and it's a fair bit of concrete that he's gone through, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So.
No, we see a different one. I don't know if this one.
Oh, no, it's the water one.
The one in the water, right. That one we can see.
Yeah.
Do they show this one when it actually gets found out? I think so. I think it actually does. It's interesting. I'll have to report back on that.
Okay.
So then Danny. Yeah, exactly. Then Danny writes the number 17 on the
slide. I love this moment. It's fantastic.
All right. Now, here, I'm gonna blow your mind on this one. In the original script, how many what was originally there? I know you're never going to be able to guess it, but just give a guess.
Oh. I wonder if it was more. Was it more?
A lot more.
32.
73.
Okay, that doesn't seem believable to me. It's probably why it got changed.
I'm assuming that's the exact reason it got changed. Not probably.
Yeah.
Why would they even think to write that originally, that he's tried to get out 73 different times?
Well, and always with tunnels. At a certain point, you'd be like, well, maybe we don't dig a tunnel anymore. Exactly.
I mean, you're not very good at it. It's like in Shawshank, you know, where there's a point where, you know, Tom says that, you know, he keeps getting caught. So then the comment that's made to him is maybe you should try and find another profession because you're not very good at being a thief.
Sure.
If you're sitting and doing 73 and you've tried to dig 73 tunnels unsuccessfully to escape, maybe.
Yeah, maybe you're not the tunnel king you thought you were. Even at 17, you might be thinking that.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I mean, this is something I looked up at the beginning of the movie when Von Luger is going through the dossiers, everyone, and he's telling Ramsey how many escape attempts different people have made. He mentions that Danny has escaped four times. So that in itself is already an interesting fact, you know.
Oh, so that means some of the tunnels, at least four of the tunnels, have worked.
Correct, but it also means that 25% of the time he's been able to get out. So hopefully 25% is considered a high rate. You know, like the question is you know when they're thinking about building tunnels and you know digging tunnels and getting out, what percentage do they expect to be able to get through and whatnot? You know, they know it's not going to be 100%.
Sure.
So, like, I wonder, is 25% considered, you know, a nice ratio? Or, you know, do they say, you know, well, maybe it only needs to be 50% or...
Well, and they're even doing two... I mean, they're obviously betting on some failure because they're doing two tunnels.
Right.
So...
No, they're doing three.
Oh, they're doing three. That's right.
They're doing three.
Yeah.
So if you're doing three tunnels, then you know the idea is that okay, at least one. So okay, from that perspective, you could say okay, it's a 30. They're looking at it. You got a 1 in 3 chance.
Yeah.
So okay, 1 in 4 is not so much off. It's not as if you could say that he's a failure if he's only gotten out four times.
Yeah. Also, I'd imagine you know when you're digging tunnels, I'd imagine there you might just come across something in the ground that you can't. Get around.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like if there's a large rock or, you know, I mean, who knows, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't recall reading either in the novel or in the script of there being some sort of obstruction.
I'm just speculating.
No, you're right. There is something to that. Okay. Now, first of all, I did my homework already as we were talking.
And okay.
So later on when they actually find Tom, not our Tom who's in the cooler, but Tom, you know, the first tunnel. And Drakulitz pulls up the tiles, and you look. You can see that the concrete block, I would say it's probably about, 5 or 6 inches thick.
Oh, okay.
And then under that, you see the continuation of the bricks on the wall. You can see that part. You can't see anything beyond it. So you only see, if you're looking at the bricks, so the wall continues down below it.
Interesting.
Yeah. But again, I have no idea what's really under there. You know, it's only the glimpse that we get to see from this very point. of when they actually find it. So,
cool.
That is, yeah, that's very interesting to see. Okay, so we continue with the 17 that Danny has decided to write on there. And I like the fact that he writes 17, and then the next line is Roger says to everybody, "All right, good luck to us." Meaning, all right, you're 1 for 4 in the past. Yeah. Let's hope this changes.
It's and I like that there's a, you know, writing 17 on it. You know, there's a bit of, there's some kind of superstition going on. You know, like just like the fact that he numbers these and
yes,
and there's, yeah, there's, so
you'd think he'd reach a point where he just doesn't want to number them anymore.
Sure, yeah.
Like I've had enough of this.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's no, it's kind of like a, you know, a notch on a bedpost, as it were. You know,
exactly.
For, yeah, you know, for Danny. So anyway,
right. And the fact is, this is the first tunnel that they're digging here. So by the end of this movie, he's already reached 19.
Yeah, you know, totally.
17, 18, and 19.
Yep.
You know, as we know, only one of them is used for them to get out. So there it goes again. Do we, 1 in 3?
Yeah. On a different note, do we get an explanation? Do we ever get an explanation of the eye scar on Attenborough's character?
No, not at all.
I like that. I like that. It's kind of like the rope. The rope burn in Inglourious Basterds. You
know, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They show that was injured at some point. How and why, it leaves everyone's imagination. You don't need to know it. He's war worn.
You know? Sure. Yeah.
He's got that scar. Yeah.
I love stuff like that in movies because it makes the audience, you know, do some of the work.
Exactly. Know? Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what you want them to do. You don't need to spoon feed everything to the audience. You can spoon feed a lot of it, but there's certain things to let them figure out on their
well,
own.
Well, and what's great is then that personalizes the film, right? Because everybody's going to have their own backstory for that character. Do you know what I mean?
Correct. Yes. So. It could have happened when he was shot down. It could have happened on one of his escape attempts.
Yep.
It could have happened when they beat the crap out of him, you know, when he was in the Gestapo for 3 months right now. You know, it could have, there's so many things that it could have happened.
Yeah. He got too close to a sparkler when he was a kid, you know.
Exactly. Anything's possible. I wonder if the real character that this is based on, the real person, I wonder if he had some sort of scar. His name was Roger Bouchel.
Oh, that'd be interesting to find out.
Towards the I think the final week, I have guests lined up for each episode of the final week, people that have direct connects to the real Great Escape. And one of them is actually a descendant or a relative of Roger. So I'll have to try to remember when I, you know, in months from now, when I get to him, when I get to recording with him, if I, you know, remember to ask him if there's any, you know, if there's any truth to the fact that he had a scar.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah, that's fantastic that you're getting those people. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we got great people lined up, not just you.
Oh, yeah. I assumed I was the only one.
Great assumption.
That's how I like to move through life. It's just assuming I'm the best person. Right.
No, they're all the best. That's the thing. The idea. They're all great. How's that? Everyone's great in the Great Escape.
Yeah.
Exactly. Fantastic. So at this point, Danny spits on his hands, you know, to help him with his grip. And then he signals to Haynes, who, once again, we go back to the idea of the signals, what we talked about yesterday. And he just taps on the window. And then they give us a great shot. You see 4 prisoners sitting outside. There's a stake in the ground. 2 of them are sitting on what looks like maybe a volleyball net or something like that. Or one of them sitting on the net and the other one is standing right next to it. Looks like there's a volleyball at one of their feet. So I guess they can use the excuse that they're building a volleyball court here.
Interesting.
At least in my imagination, that's what they seem to be doing here. You can, and basically, the prisoner starts pounding on the stake at a steady pace. Now, first of all, if you look at this guy, he looks like he's really strong. he's not like a bodybuilder or anything like that, but he still has the muscles, and you can see the way that he's so you gotta have a lot of stamina to be able to do what they're doing here.
Oh yeah.
You know, the fact I assume that there are four people there because they're going to take turns of helping out with what they're doing here. I don't know, because we never get to see any of them do it beyond now. You know, he sets up a pace, and I don't know about you, but if I was, you know, hammering something or whatever, to be able to keep that type of pace for a few minutes or whatever it is just amazing. Yeah. That they're willing to think that can actually
work. This guy looks like he's swung a sledgehammer a couple times too. So yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Well,
yes.
And I love, conversely, when we cut back to Danny, Charles Bronson is really hitting that concrete. Like, you can actually see bits of it flying, and you can hear it clattering around the room and stuff, but it's, he really wailing on that. I don't know if you've ever hit a pick into solid concrete. It is not pleasant.
No, I don't think I've ever done that. Never had the need to do so. How's that? It's just great the way that the idea of timing both of these to the same, you know, that they're pounding on the pole, the stake outside with the sledgehammer, and inside he's using the pickaxe to break into the concrete, and, you know, to do it at the exact same pace to try and hide this. Can you think of any other movie where something similar happens?
Oh, there is an... I'm trying to think. In my brain, there seems to be a Star Wars moment happens, but I can't quite think of it. Anyway.
It's not Star Wars. It's not Star Wars. It's another famous trilogy. It's another famous trilogy. Not Star Wars.
So maybe that's
and
where
Harrison
I'm going.
Harrison Ford is in it.
It's it's the frickin' stamp gag in that's what I'm thinking. It's the stamp gag in Last Crusade.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Totally.
That's
yeah,
great.
Yeah. It took exactly. me. It took me.
I,
a while.
I knew you'd get there. That's good.
Yeah, but yeah, that's why. Why I had Star Wars, because those two things are inflated in my brain, you know, from an early age.
Okay, Harrison Ford's in both of them. That's fine. That's perfect. Yes, that's the one I was thinking of too. I always love the way they do that. Obviously, here they do it a little better because also this is used in a serious manner as opposed to in a comic manner. In Crusade, that's made to, you know, just for the fun of it. I don't think it even needs to be there, but it still adds to the funness of The Last Crusade.
Last Crusade is a fun movie. Some could argue it has a little too much fun, but
yes, exactly, very true.
Little factoid on that is that actor that plays the stamp guy, he shows up in another film that same year. He's in the boardroom scene in Batman when the Joker shows up, and there's all the mob bosses. He's one of the mob bosses, and they were both filmed in the same studios. So,
wow!
So he was just like this day player. Nobody knows this guy's name.
You literally can't. His name. You can't.
They can't. They can't find it. It's nowhere on the internet. Like, knows who this guy is, and he shows up in these two films, and then that's like. Isn't that crazy?
Wait a second. You're telling me that in IMDb they don't have anything about...
They don't.
Wow. That really is.
Isn't that wild?
Wait a second. Here it is. In IMDb it says his name is Albert Ivansky. He plays the librarian.
Really?
And you're right. He's in Batman as Crime Lord number 3. And he's in two...
Yeah. Well, for a while, this guy, this must have just happened, because for the longest time, this guy was unidentified.
He's got two other movie credits. They're all four of them are uncredited. He's also in Young Toscanini. He plays Comparsa. I don't know who that is. And he plays Albert Einstein in Bullshot Crummond from 1983. Absolutely no idea. I've never heard of
any
of
those. I can see the Einstein
thing,
definitely.
And he passed away 2 years afterwards in 1991. So his career short-lived at the end of his career, at the end of his life.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they finally found out who the guy was, because for the longest time, this guy was just, he's in these two giant movies in 1989, and just nobody had any idea. So that's, they finally solved that.
He was 70, he died when he was 75, so he was 72, 73 when he made the Last Crusade. Okay, why? Back to The Great Escape, and... after that slight deviation.
That's what these are all about. It's no. Getting off tangent.
I'm fine with it. That's not a problem. And then Henley asks Mac, why 17? Which, again, this is information for the audience. It's not information for, well, it's actually, it's also information for Henley in general. You know, it's to let us know what the number 17 is. Because, oh, this is the 17th tunnel that Danny started. Okay, that's actually a good point also. It's the 17th he started. You know, how many has he finished?
Sure. Yeah, because if they get found out, yeah.
Yeah. And Danny continues to use the pickaxe and tries to... he really is hitting it. That's amazing. You know, that's a...
he's slamming into that thing. Like, and you can actually see bits of creep flying around. Wow. Like,
Now, in the... I think it's in the script that mentions it, that basically the way it created the pickaxe was with a, they used a baseball bat. It was a baseball bat filled with,
oh, okay,
with, actually maybe it's in the real, now that I think about it, maybe it was in the actual, you know, the story by Paul Brickhill. Yes, here we go. It says that the way that in order to get through the solid brick and concrete to reach the earth, someone had souvenired an old pick head, which the Russian workman had used, and Crump fitted a baseball bat in it for a handle and bashed into the brick and concrete. It kicked up a hell of a ringing noise, exactly like a pick biting into brick and concrete, and it was obvious to two of the guards, and every ferret within half a mile would galloping up inquisitively at any moment. So they obviously had to, there's half a dozen diversionists gathered outside the window, hammering at bits of tin and wood, making innocent things like baking dishes as noisily as they could for a couple of days, while they sweated with the pick until they cleared away to the earth. That's interesting.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the real life version is pretty much like what's happening here. So.
Yeah. Except it took them a couple of days. I'm assuming they didn't do this for a couple of days.
Yeah.
And the minute basically ends where we get to see the compound at night. And then, you know, the fade into that is just amazing, the way that they do it. You know, you see him working the pickaxe, and then everything just becomes dark. So it's a nice, the way that he does that.
Yeah, sometimes those, especially in these older films, those can be a little... you know, those are all done with optical printers and stuff, and they can be a little glitchy, but this is really a beautiful fade that they have here.
Yeah, no question about that. So one of the things I actually wanted to mention about this minute is, you know, the fact that Charles Bronson is predominantly shown here through this whole thing. So 12 years later, Charles Bronson was in a movie in 1975 called Breakout, where he needed to get out of a prison. And he starred in it with his then wife, Jill Ireland, who at the point when they were making this movie was the wife of a different actor in the movie, David McCollum, who Charles Bronson actually met her on the set. And that's where their affair started, which years later, a few years later, they get married. So at one point in the movie, Charles Bronson asks, his character asks Jill Ireland's character if they're going to build two tunnels in case one of them is discovered.
Nice.
which is a great connection between these two movies. You know, Bronson deals with trying to escape. I still haven't seen Breakout. I hope to see it one day, just to see the comparisons between it, you know, between the way that they do this. Do you have anything else for this minute?
I think we covered it.
All right. Excellent. Do you want to once again tell people how they can contact you?
Yeah, you can listen to me yammer on about Jaws at the Real Jaws Minute. And then we get a new one coming out called Bad at Movies, where one of us is seeing the film we're talking about for the very first time. So,
all right, sounds like fun. So while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher they might be using to listen to this podcast. You can go to our website, thegreatescapeminute.com. Facebook group is The Cooler. Our email address is thegreatminute@gmail.com. And you can contact us on Twitter at greatescapemxm. So, you come back tomorrow and finish off the week with us?
Absolutely.
All right, great. So, we'll see everyone tomorrow. Until then, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.